You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Allison Ward. Allison, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Allison, let's see, it's January 26th in 2021. You're in Texas. We're still in the pandemic. We're going to talk about your work, but just to get a sense of how is it in Texas at the moment? I mean, Texas is big. Where are you?
Yeah. Texas is big, and I am in a tiny town, which is probably the best place to be during a pandemic. I am in a little town called Kingsbury, which has about 256 people, I think. Yeah, we have a farm, and we have kind of 10 people that we're potted with here, and it's kind of, we're a little bit in a little oasis over here. So it has not been affecting me so much because I don't have to leave the farm that much. But when I go into reality, it is strange. Just our new future.
That's right. It is strange. And so let's talk about your project, your ongoing project. What are you involved in now? And I know you'll have to tell us about the history of it a little bit, but yeah, what's happening right now? What are you working on?
So right now I am working on a big project called Habitable Spaces, which is basically a village that we're building out here in Kingsbury. And the concept of it is I lived in New York and for a long time and just had a lot of problems with the art world in general. The commodification of art is my main problem. So I kind of wanted to do something about it and decided that I wanted to create a place where agriculture and the arts can intersect and the conversation can be kind of bigger than just visual art that's bought and sold in a gallery setting, but more like what is art? What are the origins of art? Because art comes about through farming, through the culturalization of us settling and on the land and creating objects. I guess also religion, but for us our focus is agriculture. So yeah, so it's kind of we're building a lot of little dwellings. And they're all built using kind of earthen building techniques. And we have a common house and we have a little community out here and we interact with our town there are a lot of ranchers and farmers out here. So we try to pull in as many creative elements as we can. So a lot of people raise sheep and do 4-H and stuff. The kids do 4-H. And so we come in and we're like, let's shear that sheep and then take the wool and teach you how to felt with it or weave with it or make something out of it. So that's kind of what we do.
So to go back to the beginnings a little bit, because it's really exciting and very cool and kind of a little utopic in a way. You started this in 2016 or 2011, but 2016 you had an artist in residence, and this is a nonprofit now also, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's a nonprofit. We got our nonprofit status in 2013, I think, or 2014. But we started formulating, my now husband and I, Shane Heinemeier, he and I started talking. I had been thinking about this for many, many years, and then I met him, and
thinking about what exactly? Because this is an artist residency, but it's also a community. It's a type of commune. It's a type of learning center. What were you thinking about exactly for all these years? All of that, or?
Kind of all of, probably what every artist thinks when they're in a city. Like, I would love a place where, me and all of my artist friends can, be and exist and grow old in. And then I guess, so I had one of my dear friends, Anna Marie Somera, and I sat down years before this project started and we rented a little house in Connemara in Ireland, and we had a brainstorming session about like, what would we want a space to look like? And so one of the things for me is, well, I would like it to be somewhat like New York, so that you're always meeting new people. You always have interesting people flowing through your space. But I would also like it to be in a rural setting, so that I'm in nature and I'm embedded in a natural environment. So those were two of the things. And then I would like artists to be part of the community and for the community to be a creative community. And then, you know, also like thinking of utopian thoughts, like how do you create a community that is like a commune but not like a commune? You know, I have friends who live in communes, and I wouldn't want to be a part of a commune because it's really hard to make visual art in a commune. You know, there's not a lot of all the space is collective. So a collective, maybe a collective dining space, but how we set it up here is we have everybody has their own little cabin where they have like a bed and a desk and their own private space where they can make things. And then we have a huge dining hall where everybody can meet and hang out, socialize and eat meals together and have discussions about things. And then right now we're building a big workshop. So we'll have, you know, an even bigger space for people to build sculptures and do ceramics and glass blowing and all kinds of stuff over there. But so when I was thinking about it, I was thinking about like all of the things I wanted, and then we just kind of tried to go refer back to those as often as we could when we were designing it and figure out how to do it. So for instance, with People Flow, we participate in two volunteer programs. One's called Woof and the other one's called Workaway, and they both bring a lot of youngsters through. Like they're, you know, people anywhere from 19 to, well, I mean, anywhere from 19 to, you know, in their 60s actually, but a lot of them are young, you know, early 20s, just out of college, trying to figure their life out. And so we have that kind of energy coming through, people curious about life and trying to figure things out. And it's really inspiring because the generations, you know, the generation that's in their 20s now is thinking about completely different things than I was when I was in my 20s. So it's super interesting for conversations and just to get us all kind of thinking about our community and where we're at in the world. And I guess it keeps us timely in a sense.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And also you have a studio of your own there as well. Is that part of it?
Yes. Yeah, I have a studio. We're currently building, we landed here in 2012 and we have been building nonstop, but also making art. And there's, I have a studio that's being built right now. I've been just kind of working in a more free form, like building a village and doing more large pieces out here. But yeah, finally have a studio now, which is super exciting. And I've got just a huge log of artwork that I want to make when I get in there.
And it's so exciting. And how does this all get financed? I mean, I think that's always seems critical to this, right? There's the flow of people, you're building, you have incredibly ambitious plans, there's artists in residence and teachers. How do you finance all of this?
Yes. Well,
that's a trick.
Actually, we finance it by sheer force of will, I think. Shane and I, when we first came down here, you know, we just worked at whatever jobs we could. And for a brief period of time, for 2 years, I think we both were working full time, which was really difficult. So we, you know, a lot of the finances come from, I mean, every single penny we make gets poured into this place. We also get a small amount of funding from the Texas Council on the Arts. We get about $8,000 from them every year. And we have gotten grants from our local power company. 1 year we got a $20,000 grant from them. And we've gotten grants from Union Pacific, we're a railroad town. So they gave us a grant, I think, for $14,000. And we get donations from generous people who believe in our project. But it is definitely a shoestring organization, which I'm hoping we can change in the future. But, you know, we just pour every single resource into it. And we have volunteers who help us build everything. And we raise all of our own food, so that helps with the bills.
All of your own food is raised. All of it? Like everything comes from the farm?
Not everything. But all of our vegetables and all of our meat comes from the farm, and all of our dairy and comes from the farm. So that's really nice. We make our own cheese. We have dairy goats, and we drink their milk and make cheese and make yogurt. We raise pigs, and we don't raise cows, but we have slaughtered our neighbor's cows. And it's, I was vegetarian in New York for 20 years before coming down here, and for the reasons of factory farming, I just didn't want to participate in a cruel industry. But I had always said, if I raise it myself and I slaughter it myself, I will eat it. And it has been an amazing paradise of pastrami. We make prosciutto. We have, it's kind of an incredible gourmet atmosphere out here, because I really believe that if you're going to raise an animal with kindness and slaughter it humanely, the other celebration you can do is really take advantage of the animal, and celebrate what the animal has to offer. So, yes, we cure our own bacon and make prosciutto, and, we raise chickens, and we, make all kinds of cheeses from our goat milk, and it's incredible.
I love that. Yeah, it sounds incredible. And this is a type of a commune, right? This is a community you're creating. This is like a city. Is it? I mean, I what comes to mind is, I know this is quite old, but Arcasanti, that was built. I don't know if you know of that, but this is kind of community where you're building and making and trying to create a self-sustaining, ultimately, environment that's financially stable. Is that the goal?
Yeah.
So, children can be raised there, and education and doctors and all of that would eventually be on the farm?
That would be wonderful. Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of what we're aiming for. Shane and I live here permanently, and we have another person, Jeff, who lives here permanently, and we have two other artists who are from New York, and it looks like they're going to be kind of doing a permanent winter stay with us. We're open to that too, because originally when we conceived of it, we were thinking, wouldn't it be nice to also be able to get away? And you can't leave a farm when you have dairy goats, especially. So, when we have permanent residents here, we can all be like, well, I want to take this month and go traveling. Not that any of us can travel anymore, but, eventually when we can travel, so we can kind of all work together to maintain a farm while also having some freedom. But, community is definitely a huge part of it. And also, on that note, the larger community of Kingsbury and also South Central Texas that we are in, I'm not a Texan, but Shane, my husband, is. And when we came down here, one thing we did not want to do was become another Marfa or another, there's so many places where artists come into a small rural area, they gentrify, they kick all the people out because nobody can afford the tax rates anymore. And, sure, they take over. I mean, Marfa's great. Marfa's a cool place, but the locals can't afford to live there anymore because they had to sell their houses because their taxes were, too expensive. So, we have embedded ourselves. I'm actually a city commissioner. He's a volunteer firefighter. We work with the community. We empower the community. Really, one of our main things is getting the community to come and be a part of what we're doing, and so that what we have to offer, they can take advantage of as well. So it's definitely not just a community for artists from New York City to come down. And it is also for them, but it's, definitely for the rural folk that live in Kingsbury.
Right. What's the biggest challenge of doing this kind of incredibly ambitious project?
Oh, man. One challenge? There's so many.
Yeah, well, the biggest one. I mentioned there's several, but, to me it would seem, there's all kinds of things I suppose we could talk about, but, the biggest challenge, so often in places like that, mentioning Marfa, or I was talking about Arcasanti, it's often, a clash with the founders and people who are there, or it's, personality clashes, or it's financing, or it's, you know, how decisions are made or something else? Yeah, what's your biggest challenge?
I think right now it's actually when we first moved down here, we moved to raw land. It was Shane's grandmother's property, so that was another fortunate thing as far as financing it. We didn't have to buy the land, so that was, you know, that helped. But there was nothing on the land. There was no address. There was no electricity. There was no buildings, no running water. It was just a huge forest. And so I think the biggest challenge was trying to figure out how to build on here with absolutely no money and, you know, again, like force of will and learning how to build because, you know, we had some skills. I mean, I'm a sculptor, so I can build stuff, but I didn't have any knowledge of how to build houses. So we had to reach out to our neighbors and friends and really learn how to build a house. I know how to run electricity. I know how to install solar panels. I know how to plumb a building with water. And I think those challenges have been kind of, till now, like the biggest, just kind of learning how to build every single scrap of thing that we have out here because, you know, we didn't have the money to hire people, so we just had to learn it ourselves. But it's also been an incredible thing because now, you know, we know how to wire a building and run electricity to a pole and install solar panels. And, you know, I mean, you know, we use composting toilets and we don't have a septic out here because we, you know, it's a dry area and we want all our water to go out to plants. But, like, I've plumbed all our buildings and they go to branch drain systems, which water gardens. And so, you know, we had to figure all that out. And sometimes when you're thinking about all that stuff, like I remember when we first got down here and we were just in this huge forest with, you know, it's like, where should things go? You know, when you're building a village and you have this concept of a village, but you're just like, here's a tree. Should town hall be here or whatever? Like it's really kind of hard to conceive of something when there's just nothing there to begin with. So I'd say that's probably the biggest challenge.
And for now, when artists come down, that's a residency. So they come down, they work in a studio. Do they have to pay for the residency or part of it? Is it subsidized? How does the residency work?
Yeah, the residency. Yes, this is So the residency is free, but it's not like a normal residency. Again, like we're all about getting artists out into the community. So, if you come down to do a residency with us, don't expect to be holding away in your studio. We ask all of our artists to make a piece that either becomes part of the permanent. We kind of think of habitable spaces as a living sculpture, a living collaborative sculpture. So you can make a piece that becomes part of the buildings here or the landscape here or the landscape or buildings down in downtown Kingsbury, or you could do a performance piece for, you know, people in our community. There's all kinds of things you could do, but it has to somehow collaborate either with habitable spaces itself or Kingsbury, or the area that we're in some way. So that's how the artists pay for their residency time here.
That's exciting. And how do you select those? Is there an open call, or can people apply to you? How does that work?
We're still kind of trying to figure it all out. We did one year where we did an open call. And we didn't have the infrastructure to really handle the amount of artists that we had. And, it was fine, but it was really a struggle to keep everybody happy. So now what we do is kind of word of mouth. People, you know, email us or find out about us and then approach us and ask us for a residency. And I think, you know, probably in a few years once everything's built, because, you know, we're still working on the workshop. But once everything's finished, I think we'll go back to an open call situation. But for now, it's kind of, if you hear about us through the grapevine or get recommended from a friend, you know, or something like that and contact us. And I mean, we have a steady flow of artists, so we haven't had to to look for anyone yet, which is great. But I do want to go back to open call eventually because I think it's more egalitarian and it you know, you can really find artists that you might not know about. But yeah, that's how we do it for now.
Well, it certainly is exciting, and it's so cool to hear that you're doing this because it's an artist's dream, it's an artist's project, but also a community and so much. I want to ask you one more question, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
I keep about 5 books on hand at all time, but I'm working my way through 3 different books right now. One is Wilhelm Reich, The Mass Psychology of Fascism. He is an amazing writer and was Austrian, had to escape Austria during the Nazi regime and moved to the United States and has some super interesting, very prevalent thoughts. So I would say to any of your listeners, like, definitely check it out because The Mass Psychology of Fascism is a timely book for right now. And then I'm also reading Braiding Sweetgrass, which is Robin Wall Kimmerer. She is a botanist and a Native American professor at, I can't remember what university she's at, but she's amazing. And it's really funny because almost every volunteer through the work, the WOOF program, Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms, has come through here reading this book as well. So I guess all the farmers are thinking in terms of her knowledge. And then the other one that I just started is The Chalice and the Blade. And I know it's an older book from the 80s, but Rian Eisler, I think is her name. And kind of, it's about pre-written history and about kind of a pre-masculine history, one where sexes are more equal, and she's kind of exploring that in terms of archaeology and anthropology and what people were doing before the early Greeks in a time when things were history was oral. So those are the 3 ones that I'm reading right now.
I want to thank you so much for talking to me today and also doing this project. It's so exciting. I wish you both great luck and success. And Allison, I just want to thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it was a pleasure.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.